Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Carris and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we thought we'd do a Booker special in advance of the Booker Prize being announced next week as we record. So it'll be announced on the 19th of November. It was pushed back 2 days. It was meant to be the 17th of November, and Barack Obama is releasing his... His book?
The first part of his memoirs.
The first part of his memoirs on the 17th. And the Booker Prize people decided that they didn't...
Let's not compete.
Yeah. Let's not compete. That's too much going on in that space.
Which I think is really good for the authors in particular, because I guess a lot of these authors are debut or less well-known authors, and part of the Booker Prize is the sales that you get.
Yeah.
And so if some of that gets kind of absorbed by a huge... book release.
That's right.
You don't want to jeopardize the
especially this year, I think, in a year where so many book launches have been pushed back or drowned out by other things going on, or not able to get the full light of day that you would on a tour and things like that. So a wise decision. But first, book news. There's been another prize that's been announced, and it's the Goldsmiths Prize, which is the prize for innovative fiction. And I think their catchphrase is...
Have you got it? Oh, no, I was looking up the book.
Putting the novel... the most novel fiction, something like that. So it has been awarded to John Harrison for his book, The Sunken Land Begins to Rise. So that's a £10,000 prize. Mm. I had not heard of this at all, Annie.
I think we discussed the short list or the long list a while back.
So DBC Pierre was on there, Xiaolo Gu Guo was on there, and a couple of others I've just forgotten. But he has... been announced the winner of that. So
Will Eaves called it a brilliant realist fantasy about love in middle age and the dissolution of the post-war settlement. So it sounds like a bit spec fiction. I think there's these babies that appear from the sea.
I think one of the judges or one of the critics said this will be a modern classic that we'll be reading for years and years to come. So that's a big call.
It is.
The Sunken Land Begins to Rise. I'm not normally, spec fic doesn't appeal to
I'll give it a go.
Necessarily, but Annie might. You're going to give it a go?
Maybe.
Yeah. Annie will fill us in. So onto the Booker shortlist. So starting, I think in alphabetical order, Diane Cook with The New Wilderness. And this is, and that's published by One World Publications.
One of my favourite publishers.
It's been getting Booker success as well. They published Marlon James, didn't they? Yeah. The Seven Killings. Seven something. His winning book a couple of years ago, and I think even another one since then. So The New Wilderness has been described as dystopian, and for that reason it put me off reading it. However, knowing my luck, if that's the one that I haven't read, it's probably the one that will now win. But Annie, what else do we need to know about The New Wilderness?
So I haven't read it, but it does appeal to me. So it's set in a post-climate changed world. And it follows a mother and daughter who have agreed to be part of an experiment in this new wilderness, which is really the only wild green place left on Earth. So it sounds like the cities have been taken over by smog and overcrowded living. There's a heat belt that you can't exist in. These two characters have chosen to kind of go out into the wilderness. But it sounds to me a little bit like the Marion Dariusk. Is that her first name? Mary Dariusek book that we read. So it sounds a little bit like that near future climate changed world with
Our life in the forest.
Our life in the forest, quite fraught relationships. It's mainly narrated through the younger woman's perspective. So, it does appeal to me. I think it sounds really good.
Well, I loved Our Life in the Forest. Mm. So if, I'm open to that idea. I think at the moment the idea of reading a book set in the near future with climate change impact is sort of depressing.
Absolutely. So that's but I wonder whether it's a little bit like weather as well, where it's kind of in order to grapple with something you actually have to look at it and you have to examine it. So anyway, I'm keen to read that, so I'll let you know, and especially if it wins, I'll read whichever one wins.
That's right. And that will be just my luck, of course. So next on the list, so that was The New Wilderness. And next on the list is Tsitsi Dangaremba from Zimbabwe with This Mournable Body, published by Faber and Faber. So This is set in Harare, Zimbabwe. It's actually the third in a loose trilogy, but the previous two books were published some time ago, 10 or 20 years ago. But the previous one, I think, was Nervous Condition, and this one's This Mournable Body. And the main character is Tumbu, who has just left her sort of stagnant job. She's living in a boarding house or a hostel, and it picks up at this point. But I think the previous two dealt with her perhaps as a teenager or her younger years. Yeah. So we are following this character. I haven't read the first two, and I think that I tried reading This Mournable Body and I actually DNF'd it. It sort of moved very slowly for me, and I couldn't really grapple with the character of Tumbu, what she wanted or what was her purpose or what were we meant to be wanting to happen. You know, I couldn't really. She sort of goes along to a job interview or an interview with a landlady to see if she might live there. I think she does move at some point, and then some other characters appear quite randomly, but you're not sure, are they important or not, or what relation are they to her. That none of them seem really that connected. I couldn't get a grip on. I couldn't get traction with it.
Yeah.
But I have heard in some reviews that it makes more sense if you've read the earlier books, and some of those characters may have appeared in the earlier books. And so it makes sense that she wouldn't be explaining who they are. But I took the view that as a book, a shortlisted book, it should stand on its own merits. I wasn't too worried about that going in. And I don't think it's fatal to enjoy. I think if you enjoy the book, you'll still get a lot out of it. It just didn't quite work for me. I really wanted to love it.
Yeah.
And again, it's probably now going to win. And then
you'll have to pick it up again.
I just couldn't get. What's your impression?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm only 100 pages in, but I think I'm enjoying the tone. I also don't really know where we are or what's happening. I mean, apart from the broad strokes that you've laid out, I quite like that though. Yeah, the tone is really lively and fun. I get the sense that this character, Tumbu, has quite a personality, but she's very by necessity, because she doesn't have many close friends or family in the city.
She's quite isolated.
She doesn't get a chance to kind of show that off.
Yeah.
So she's kind of projecting all of her fantasies onto the people around her. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'll persist.
There is a tone of comedy which I liked.
I've laughed a few times.
Yeah, there's sort of a lovely comedic sort of aspect to it. And I think at one point someone's walking down the street in front of her and the two ladies walk on either side as if they're escorting police escorts or something, which you can totally picture. And I did, on the front cover, Chinua Achebe has blurbed it and said, "as natural as the grass grows." Mm. And I do think that her writing style is wonderfully natural.
Yes,
and
it's very organic. Yeah. And almost to the point that there's not much description of what's going on. It's a lot of reported speech and kind of thought, and you don't get much of the exterior world, which I think is, I'm just struggling to place it a little bit at the moment, but I think that will come. I'm confident that she knows where she's going. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I'm open to picking it up again. I was reading it at a time where I was quite impatient and needed just to know where I was and to be able to get on with it. So I think you're right. If it could be one of those books that you have to just let yourself sink into and it'll come. But it'll be really interesting. Mm. So that's This Mournable Body by Tsitsi Dangaremba. And it did feel fresh. It felt like something I hadn't read before, which I loved. So we're still open to that. Annie's still going with it. So Annie, you might report back. Then the next on the list, Avni Doshi with Burnt Sugar, and published by Hamish Hamilton, Penguin Random House. And this book was first published in India, I think. So she's Indian-American. And I think Annie and I have both read this one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the story of Antara and her relationship with her mother, which is quite fraught. So she had an unorthodox childhood where her mother partly for some of that time lived in an ashram, and her mother took up with the guru, and then things sort of went downhill from there. So Antara has been quite neglected in lots of ways in terms of having a proper childhood and having your needs met and that sort of thing. And that's played on her mind. She's quite bitter about it. But now her mother seems to be developing Alzheimer's, and so she needs looking after. So Antara has to check in on her and look after her. And this is a really, you know, it's a complex situation. Her husband is really interesting just in the background because he really likes her mother. And so, and he's one of those, he's obviously.
He's a peacekeeper type person.
Yeah, he's a peacekeeper. And he's obviously someone who hasn't had maybe enormous trauma in his life. So he just doesn't get it, you know, from Antara's point of view. And so it's very interesting. I found it really engaging. I sort of flew through it. But then towards the end, there are a few twists and turns and you start to second guess things, and you've got two unreliable narrators in a way, because Antara is, you know, you're not sure whether she feels like she's losing her mind a bit because, you know, her mother keeps
gaslighting her
and her husband starts to do a bit the same. And then her mother's unreliable because she's losing her memory. Mm. And so you're not sure who to believe. And it really turns around back and forth and the ground shifts.
It's quite uncomfortable to read, isn't it?
Yeah. And when I say the ground shifts, it's not too much so that you lose track of where you are in the story, but just you're not
emotionally more so just who you're invested in, and
you think you're with Antara, but then you think, hang on a minute, can we really believe her? And what I loved about this was that it leaves the reader to interpret and it leaves the reader to decide. And Antara has been described as an unlikable narrator. She's quite dry and sort of caustic, and there's a line early on where she says, sometimes I cry when no one else is around. I'm grieving, but it's too early to burn the body. And for some readers, that's quite an off-putting thing to say. I didn't mind that. I found that
it's electric. Like, I love
really
the writing.
Dry. Yeah. I love that dry tone. Yeah. But you do have, you know, as a reader, you can decide, is she just wallowing in this victimhood of like she needs to get over her childhood and move on? Or is she quite reasonable to have these reactions to her mother? And is her mother the villain of the piece? And you get to sort of work that out for yourself, and it's not always clear. And I thought when I sort of went, I think it's a book that if you reread it, you would read it in quite a different way, possibly.
Yep, after the ending.
And for that reason, I think it's a dark horse for the Booker, because the Booker judges do need to read it two or three times. And I think it's a book that will give back on a second or third reading.
And it's so finely tuned. You know, I think the writing is quite sparse. Yeah, some of the sentences have really seared into me, like that one.
Yeah.
It's my kind of darkly funny, quite strange book. And I think it's also something that we haven't seen very often in fiction, where there's this kind of tense mother-daughter relationship, but set in a cultural milieu where it is expected that the child will look after the parent when they become unwell, in a different way than I think we do in Western society, where we're more happy to shunt that off to hospitals or medical institutions. So she feels a personal need to do this caring work that her mother was never able to do for her, or she felt was never given to her by her mother.
Yeah.
So there's such that premise alone, I think, is so tense and so rich to mine. And yeah, as you say, the way it plays out is much more unexpected than I think that initial premise you would think.
Yeah, and it's quite playfully done.
It is, yeah.
And it's also, even though it's a culture that's different to the one we're living in at the moment, but it also is very relatable in lots of ways, because there's always interesting family dynamics and the relationship between, you know, the husband and her mother have, where they sort of sometimes gang up against her in a way that you can imagine that happening in lots of families. So there's a lot that's quite universal.
Absolutely.
As well as this particular situation that Antara finds herself in. So I enjoyed it. I think that's a potential for the Booker. It's what I'm calling it, the dark horse. Next on the list is Maaza Mengiste from Ethiopia and the USA with The Shadow King. So published by Canongate Books. So this is set in Ethiopia in the 1930s, and we follow Hirut, who is a servant working in the house of Kidane and Asta, his wife. And Kidane's in the army, and the Ethiopian army has to mobilise because Italy, this is the period of time where Italy under Mussolini invaded Ethiopia and occupied that country for 5 years. So it's a period of history I didn't know anything about. So in that sense, quite interesting, like she really brings that to life from an Ethiopian point of view. But she also has a character called Ettore, who's a photographer with the Italian army, so with quite a cruel and vicious Italian general. So you get an insight into that part of it as well. It starts off almost Cinderella-like, where she's working really hard and she's very downtrodden in this house, and Asta is almost like the stepmother who's really cruel to her, and Kidane was a friend of her family's, and so he's sort of taken her in. You know, Asta's portrayed as quite a manipulative or unlikable character. Mm-hmm. And then they go off to war, and Asta becomes almost a woman warrior. Kidane is an army, you know, he's an army general. He's very senior in the army there, and he can be quite violent as well. So it's beautifully written. It's a very quiet book in lots of ways, despite the fact that a lot of it's set in the middle of a war. And I sort of got there in the end. I found it built up to the point where those characters really do, it does get to you by the end, and there are some very moving scenes and very poignant moments, and it's quite cinematic, lots of the scenes. You can really see it on the big screen. But I did find it slow, and it was interesting, despite the fact they're at war, I didn't feel a lot of dramatic tension or narrative tension in it. And even though they are clearly in danger, I never felt like the characters were in peril. So that's a weird...
You're not holding your breath in the same way that you are in something like Burnt Sugar, for example, where there's no war, but
but very tense.
Tension is high.
So it was an interesting, very beautifully written book with characters that are complex. And I say complex, I didn't quite know what to make of them. So it's very subtle. I think so things like Ettore, the photographer, who photographs Hirut at one point, and there's this, I think, quite poignant relationship, and I don't mean relationship between them, they just sort of on either side of a fence really, but quite poignant interaction between them over the course of the book. But it's so subtle, I couldn't quite kind of
grasp it.
So I'm not sure about that one.
I think she's got quite a reputation, doesn't she?
Yes. No, she's really interesting. So I really wanted to love it, I think. I do think it's incredibly sort of accomplished and cohesive. But I just wasn't quite sure who was the hero of the story. I think, of course, the point is that sort of thing is very ambiguous. So Asta becomes something of a heroine, even though we don't like her at all in the beginning of the book. And I should say as well, I really felt like I was in Ethiopia. It has a beautiful sense of place.
Yeah.
She's in lots of layers and elements. So there's the Amharic and the Italian language that's dropped in here and there. There's the food, the landscape, it's all really rich and layered and textured. So I think she did that really well. You do feel like you're there.
Yeah.
The next on the list is Shuggie Bain by Douglas Stewart. So a Scottish-American author. He's in America now, I think, but grew up partly in Glasgow, and this is set in Glasgow. Mm. It's Shuggie Bain, and his mother is Agnes, and she's an alcoholic. And it's his story, his sort of coming of age, I suppose, but starting in a little house in Glasgow with Agnes and her mother and her husband Shug, and then they move to the outskirts to a new housing development and it sort of unfolds from there. What did you think, Annie?
I haven't read it. Again, too bleak for me. I've had several customers come in and say this is beautiful but just absolutely gut-wrenching, and that's not the book that I want to read at this point in time.
But you loved Hamnet.
I did. I did. I don't think I expected to be so emotionally wrung out by that. And that, I think, had some hopeful – well, the joy of the writing in that book really elevated that for me.
Yeah.
So even though I wept like a baby, it was through beauty rather than despair, I think.
Yes. So – and Hamnet, I should add, was, I suppose, one of the surprise omissions from the Booker list.
In my opinion, yes.
Yes. No, I think quite a few people, you know, but did win the Women's Prize, so that's okay. So, yeah, Shuggie Bain, I loved this.
Yeah.
And I thought, like you, just from the blurb, you think it's going to be very bleak, but it actually is so beautiful. There is a sense of humour that runs through. And, yes, while the circumstances are really tough and harrowing to imagine and unfortunately all too common, I would say, just being in poverty and being – you know, not being able to go to school half the time and really him not being cared for and having to be the carer for his mother.
You're not warming it to
at
me.
At age seven. Like, whilst all of that is harrowing and that is the situation, the actual story is fun and beautiful and lightly done and just really, really immersive, and it was a book I kept wanting to get back to.
Okay, that's nice.
I didn't feel worn down by it, or, you know, it didn't make me sort of feel sad or depressed or anything. So I really loved it. I thought he, for a debut as well, he did it so cleverly, because there's the dialogue is perfectly captured. He gives you enough of a sense of what's happening and then moves on to the next, you know, the action seems to move quite quickly. It's so interesting to see Agnes. So even though she's not sympathetic in the sense that she's being a terrible mother, I suppose we could say, she also has these redeeming features, and it shows her, as you might see her as a from her son's point of view, as someone who's has a real sense of dignity. So no matter what's going on in that house, when she steps foot outside the front door, she is groomed and she is holding her head up high, and her son emulates that. There's one gorgeous scene where things have gone down, it's been bad, and he has to get himself into a taxi by himself, age 7 or 9 or whatever he is at this point, to go somewhere. And as he, like, of course, the neighbours are looking through the twitching the curtains. And as he steps towards the taxi and he sees the curtain twitches, he sort of waves to them like his mother would, really like a regal, you know, sort of wave, and like really holds himself with that poise. And so you get a sense of, you know, there's some beautiful qualities of his mother, and you know, you understand why he would still adore her. And then, of course, it's a problematic kind of upbringing. But I loved that he had that compassion. It's really sensitively, compassionately told. And then Shuggie Bain, he is, of course, the hero, but he's not, that doesn't mean he's just sort of a one-dimensional cute boy that's, you know, that you feel for. He's also got some annoying qualities, and so it's a lovely sort of portrait of a real boy. Like you do feel very much that all the characters feel very, very real. Okay. So you're completely there, you know, with him, and it's redemptive. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Maybe.
Yes.
If it wins.
Give it a go. Yeah. So that's my favourite to win.
Okay, yeah, right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the interesting question is, someone was saying on Instagram, but is it going to work against Shuggie Bain that it's a more straightforward linear narrative than some of the other books? It's not as experimental or new or interesting, which shouldn't hold it back. No, but
the book is for the best book. It's not The Goldsmiths or something like that. So, yeah, I think hopefully the best book will win.
You know, it does feel fresh, because this is from a working class perspective in Glasgow, which is not a point of view that we read that often. Mm. Certainly, you know, historically you wouldn't have read from that point of view. And it really, you can tell that it's authentic. It just rings true.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Let's hope that's not the touch of death for Shuggie Bain, as we've been known to do in the past.
Yeah, I hope we're not jinxing it. But the next one on the list could also be the winner. So Real Life by Brandon Taylor, who's an American author. Mm-hmm. Do you know much about this one?
Oh. No. This is the thing. I haven't read any of these in full except for Burnt Sugar, which was the one that immediately jumped out to me and I think would probably be my incredibly biased pick, because it's the only one I've read all of. So, no, tell me about Brandon Taylor.
So this is another debut, would you believe? Mm. And this one, so Brandon Taylor's a Black American author, and this is a story of a young man, Wallace, in his fourth year of biochemistry at university in a Midwestern town, and he's gay. And it's a weekend that unfolds towards the end of summer, and what happens, it's his dynamics with his friends and then grappling with the death of his father, which for reasons that I think will unfold is a complex kind of grief. It's not the straightforward grief that a lot of people would expect. So he's grappling with something from his past, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of partway through, so I haven't got to the – that hasn't the been crux, revealed yeah. at this point. But I didn't have it at home. And then over the course of the US elections, I was following Brandon Taylor on Twitter, and he was my absolute Twitter highlight of the US elections. He was so funny. And it was really – because we're in Australia and I was watching CNN for part of the
on
time.
On repeat.
And then we just had it on the – well, TV generally and flicking a little bit, but CNN for part of the time. And, you know, he was, of course, watching similar stuff like CNN as well. So I was getting these updates of what is going on with that guy on CNN with the – he's trying to do maths on live television and Wolf Blitzer's barking at him and he's trying to do these calculations. So it was quite a – it's strange when you're so far away but you actually feel like –
very
you know,
close.
Someone, yeah, really gets it. And anyway, so I thought I have to buy the book now and I'm really enjoying it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it funny?
It's more of a serious book, but you can tell there's a knowing sense of humour. But the character Wallace is quite vigilant, I think, through having maybe a tough childhood, which is yet to be revealed, but you can tell he's got a real vigilance about him. And of course, part of that is growing up gay, where it's, you know, you do have to be a little bit on guard. Part of it is being black and being worn down by years and years and years of racist comments, casual racism, systemic racism that he's so used to. He just sort of has a few defences that he's had to build up over the years. So he's not per se a really laugh out loud funny character, but that's, you can sort of tell that he would have a sense of humour, and there's a sense of humour running through in terms of some of the observations. Yeah, so it's subtly there, but the story's not a laugh out loud, you know, funny story. It's hard to believe it's a debut because it is so well written. He captures that sense of being student life without being too studenty. So I'm not into student books, as you know.
Yes.
Not into the campus novels. It's been described as a really fresh take on the campus novel, but that it doesn't feel too collegey. It's more just about the dynamics of this friendship group, and then also running alongside it his work in the lab, which is doing lots of experiments on microscopic worms, which is fascinating, and his work ethic and it's still unfolding, so I'm still partway through, but I'm finding it really beautifully written and hard to believe. It's I think he's written sort of short stories and other work, obviously, but as a first novel, quite incredible. Cool. So that could be a late
addition to your favourites list.
Yeah, a late addition. That's Real Life by Brandon Taylor. But until I get to the end of that, I would say Shuggie Bain, or with the dark, you know, a dark horse being Burnt Sugar.
Yeah, I think I am in no position to judge because I have only read one of them.
It'll probably be The New Wilderness.
I'll be very happy to know what the judges think. They always are a little bit surprising, I think, the Booker winners. So you're never entirely sure what they're going to choose.
Well, as long as they just pick one this year.
Oh, yes. Not all six, you don't think?
Yeah, that would be a good start, so we don't have a tired result. Anyway, that's our take. Let us know if you've been reading any books from the Booker shortlist or who you think might win, if you haven't read them, what your tip is. You can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.